Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in live from the Big X Studios in Jeffersonville. It's our Monday edition as we begin another week here with you. Don't forget, if you can't catch us live in the 11 o'clock hour each day, you can also find us as a podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on SoundCloud as well. A few easy ways to catch us really on demand at your convenience. Big day because today marks the start of Stage 2 in Indiana of Governor Eric Holcomb's Back on Track Indiana plan. And of course, if things go well, if numbers and hospitalizations and deaths and emergency room capacity, ventilator capacity, if it continues to be at a reasonable rate, we'll see more and more progress over the coming months. And of course, if this plan went 100%, as it's laid out, and there were no spikes, there were no issues, there were no problems, which, to be quite honest, could be unlikely. There could be some changes in things. You would get back to somewhat of a normal, in Indiana at least, around July 4th, or I think actually on July 4th, as Indiana would have worked its way at that point through five different stages of returning to, I call it, a new normal. Today, this is stage two. Hoosiers over 65 and those with high-risk health conditions encouraged to remain at home, as you very likely have been doing now for a while. Social gatherings of 25 people or less may now take place if you follow social distancing guidelines put forth by the CDC. A week from today, restaurants will open at 50% capacity with no bar seating open at this time, and there is consistent progress. Religious services may pick up here later this week on May 8th, and again, if things continue on this path, there will be steady progress to look forward to over the coming weeks and months. In fact, we even get to a point where gyms, as far as workout facilities and also leagues and sports and other things that it says will open back up. Now, there obviously will be new looks at those sporting events, and we've got to get to that point with no big spikes or big concerns. And I've been watching Georgia very closely as they opened up last week, how maybe their numbers go up or don't go up, we hope. Texas, another state that reopened portions of its economy earlier than others. And I think you can kind of use those as a gauge to see when you get back out in somewhat of a more normal routine and you're eating dinner out at a couple places a week and you're around a few more people than maybe what you've been until this date, we'll see how the virus spreads. And if it makes a big roaring push with more numbers and more infected and more deaths, and if that happens, obviously you can throw these plans out the window. But for now, a very clear and concise plan. And I'll tell you one thing about Indiana, and I've been looking and reading and paying attention to a lot of different states. There's so many rules and regulations and suggestions out here, so many press conferences every day from the president and his staff all the way down to governors and even at times local officials. This is, at least it's clear cut and organized. There's a very readable plan at backontrack.in.gov that I've looked at a few times this weekend. I also saw, I don't even know who made this, but I retweeted it, a chart that really gives you by date a very clear understanding of some of the most important things that we do on a day-in, day-out basis, and when they're open, what percentage of it will be open, and so forth. So let's hope that when we move from stage one to two, which we're doing today, at least the beginning of stage two, that we can be talking about moving to stage three, which would be coming up on May 23rd, later this month. Big jump from stage two to three as well, as far as capacities and exactly what's open and how business is done. So let's cross our fingers that we're talking more in the coming weeks about what's getting ready to reopen and restart our economy, getting back maybe to some sports at some point. Again, it's all going to look different. Nothing's going to look the same. It's going to be completely different with social distancing, but let's hope we're talking about progress that's being made on this measured course from Governor Holcomb and his staff, and that we are making that progress and not holding in a stage or, God forbid, have to go backwards to stage one, which stage one is where we're coming out of with the stay-at-home order that has expired now. So glad you're with us today. Lots to get to, as always, to start the week. We've got a lot of great guests lined up for you, not only today, but for this week as well. Let's jump into the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we have our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. In the headlines today, we've got an announcement from the Big Ten Conference that just came out earlier this morning. IU Kokomo has landed a local high school basketball standout from New Albany. We'll talk about that, and also some not good news for IU football on the recruiting front. They had been pretty active signing players here recently, but they lost a commitment who flipped to another Big Ten school over the weekend. So we will cover that as well coming up a little bit later here in this first segment. Also today, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. He covers IU and joins us Mondays. We'll talk a little bit about the Big Ten's announcement. We'll talk a little bit about reopening the state of Indiana and its economy. And, of course, we'll get into some IU basketball with Zach today as well. Also, later in the program, Chad Gilbert is scheduled to be with us. Chad is the former coach at Jeff and across the area, boys and girls, currently Charlestown's athletic director, and he's also an IHSA executive board member. In fact, they've got a big meeting going on that started earlier this morning. So we hope that Chad is able to join us today. We want to know what happened in that meeting, if he can tell us, because they were discussing activities this summer, off-season stuff for high school sports, and I believe going to start discussing the fall. So we'll see how that goes. Is there a plan forthcoming to play fall sports such as high school football in our state? We'll talk with Chad Gilbert about that. And, of course, with Chad, we've got to talk The Last Dance last night. Episodes 5 and 6 were on ESPN at 9 and 10 o'clock last night. Two more great episodes. Again, if they had all 10 out right now, I would have stayed up the night to watch them. Really good stuff. Takes you back in time. We'll talk about some of our favorite moments from last night's edition, covering, of course, the Bulls in their heyday, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Phil Jackson, kind of the, I guess, the headline figures in this docuseries that's really caught on. But we're moving through it, already through episode 6, two more Sundays at least of new live programming to come. You get two new episodes each Sunday, but Chad and I will break down that. I'm sure that many of you, like us, make that a Sunday ritual at this point with no live sports or really anything else to mark on your calendar as far as sports go right now. It's been a really nice reprieve and good stuff. In fact, just thinking about it right now, last night, this is all footage being mixed in with interviews from today, but footage from back in the 90s, whether it's highlights, whether it's interviews where the NBA people filmed Jordan and the Bulls in his final season, different clips all meshed together. It does jump around a little bit, but they go back to when Jordan was drafted about the shoe situation. And Jordan actually said he wanted to sign with Adidas, who at that time, Nike was a bit of a shocker. Adidas would have been a full-fledged shocker. They weren't even in really that type of business. So that was very interesting to hear. But so many different things you look back on that time and that great Bulls team and the great run that, I guess you could say, two different runs that they had, and you pick up little things that you would have never known otherwise. But really good programming, and it's all coming at a really good time. So we'll talk about that with Chad today. That's the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Visit your local Honey Baked Ham store in New Albany, and with a $15 purchase, you get a large bone-in ham at 50% off. Again, you spend 15 bucks, you're eligible to buy a large bone-in ham at 50% off. It's a great deal going on right now. Don't forget, you can interact with the show, submit a comment or question. We might use it on the air today for one of our guests. You can follow me on Twitter, at Hoosier Hills, all one word, Hoosier Hills on Twitter. You can tweet me, leave a message there, a DM there. You can also follow us on Facebook. Search the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison on Facebook. You'll find our page. It's also where you can find links to podcasts and other things each day. Okay, let's get into our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. This morning, the Big Ten, an announcement that they have further suspended all organized team activities through June 1st. Currently, that ruling they had put out was set to expire today. Basically, what this means for an off-season sport like basketball, you know, you can do the Zoom meetings, you can do telephone calls. I'm not even sure if it addresses anything in person or not, but you can't do any kind of practices, any kind of workouts, any kind of weight training, anything that's collective as a team together like that. So, and I think most conferences are on, at least have been on the same page with this ruling from the Big Ten Conference. Again, it was set to expire May 4th, which was today. So basically a 28-day suspension of this no organized activities order. And what I guess is probably most important right now is with football season just around the corner, everybody wanting to know what's going to happen. There have been some positive things out recently that there does seem to be the willingness by a lot of people to play football this season in some form or fashion. I think everybody's kind of waiting for a plan or exactly how it could look, or at least some of the chief principles in what a big sports season right now could look like. But with this Big Ten order, basically it says there will be absolutely no football practice or instruction until at least June 1st. And I don't think that's really that big of a surprise either, because school and campus is closed at Indiana through the summer session. So it's going to be interesting to see what the football plan is. It sure sounds like we're headed down a path to get a plan for college football soon, or at least, again, some of those major principles about what they're going to try to do this season. The NCAA over the weekend also announcing some principles that they've adopted as far as what a return to college sports look like. We'll talk with Zach Osterman about that in the next segment. But again, interesting times, still no organized activities, and with campuses closed, not a huge surprise that that ruling by the Big Ten Conference has been extended. Love to see local high school athletes commit to colleges, especially in basketball. So many great players in this area, whether it's Division I at the NCAA level or all the way down to NAIA and junior college. We have some really good programs in the area, really in the state as well, in this Midwestern area. And we have a lot of players that go on to play even small college basketball at a very high level. And this weekend, Julian Hunter of New Albany High School, seems like he has been with the program forever because of the fact he really was a contributor even as a freshman early on in his career. He made his college decision on Friday. He committed to IU Kokomo, and that's where he'll play college basketball. So congratulations to Julian. IU Kokomo, same conference as IU Southeast, and also a school in that conference that is somewhat on the rise, really building as far as their competitive level. And you've got a lot of the IU campuses, the remote campuses, IU Southeast, IU East up in Richmond, IU Kokomo coming on, IU South Bend, that have really good coaches and are building good college hoops programs. So Julian Hunter of New Albany with his college decision over the weekend, and I think there'll be more. I think you'll see Grant Goman of Floyd Central, a senior, pick a school in the near future. I think you'll see a couple players at Christian Academy, Bailey Conrad, TJ Proctor. They're going to play college basketball at, I think, a reasonable level as well. There could be a couple other commitments from the area, but this great season that we had locally, even though it didn't end up with all sorts of state championships, I think because we didn't get that far, we will see, I think, a number of players. We are seeing a number of players from this area get a chance to continue their college basketball career. And it's amazing when you look back at some of the great teams, the successful teams in the area that win state championships or have a dominating run for a few seasons, you'll see almost automatically a lot of players from that roster go on to play college basketball. And it won't just be your Trey Kaufmans and your Cooper Jacobies for Silver Creek that get a chance to play, you know, really high to mid-level Division I basketball. It will be others as well. You know, I look back at the New Albany State Championship team. It's amazing how many kids, how many players from that team, not just Romeo, not just Sean East, that went on to play or still are playing some level of college basketball. So a lot of players from this 2020 class getting the chance to move on. It'll be fun to follow them as well in upcoming seasons. And some negative news for IU football from a recruiting perspective. Rodney McGraw, he is the defensive lineman from Elkhart, was a big commitment to Indiana. In fact, Indiana's first verbal commit in the 2021 class. He announced yesterday that he has flipped his decision, and on top of making it bad news that he's not coming to Indiana, he's picked another school in the Big Ten Conference. He's going to head to Penn State once his high school football career is up. So Indiana had five commitments in the 2021 class. They are now down to four, and they lose one of their more talented players, Rodney McGraw, to Penn State. That's a look at our Zaxby's headlines for this Monday edition of the program. In addition to Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star coming on with us in the next segment, and also later in the program, Chad Gilbert, we have our senior spotlight today that we'll do at the very end of the program, Jack Giltner of New Washington High School, a baseball and boys track and field athlete for New Washington, is who we will profile later in today's show. Stay with us. This is a Monday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star with us always on Mondays as we talk IU basketball, a little football, and more. And I actually want to start with no sports, but ultimately this will lead to the return of sports, we all hope, eventually. It's a new day in Indiana. Nothing major, but some small adjustments as we enter stage two of a five-stage process announced by Governor Holcomb on Friday for the Hoosier State to return, if all goes well, by July 4th to some level of normalcy. It won't be exactly what we're used to, but maybe new normal is the way to describe things. Zach, a little politics or a little news for a minute, I guess. Your thoughts on this five-stage plan? Stage one turns into stage two today, and stage two takes another jump forward into a farther stage two process next week when restaurants can open at 50% capacity.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's perfect. I think that, you know, reasonable minds are trying to wrap sort of their, just their arms around this idea that we have to be safe, we have to be careful. We also can't all live in a cave for 18 months. You know, neither of those is, neither throwing all the doors open and saying, we're back, let's go, nor simply saying, nothing will work and nothing can be done until there's a vaccine and we can just guarantee the complete eradication of this thing. Neither of those is a viable solution. And it's going to be about a couple things. I think number one, it's going to be about personal comfort. Like, you know, for example, restaurants can open, as you say, soon enough. Would you go back? I'm not sure I would, at least not initially. Let's say Indiana finds a way to bring students back to its campus. How does that, the fall semester, how does that change the calculus? How does that change the dynamics in play and different things like that? And then the other part of it too is just, I think everyone also needs to realize that this is not going to be a linear process. Like the poor comparison I drew talking to a friend this morning was like when you're learning how to drive a manual transmission, at the beginning, you're going to stall a lot, and there's going to be a lot of setbacks and a lot of restarts. And there's, I think that one of the things that experts would tell you is even as we try to get into these gradual reopenings, there's nothing to say that we aren't going to wind up in lockdown situations again because of, sort of new surges in cases and things like that. But it's just about trying to find, and if we want to get a little political, and I'll say this as a Georgian, not as a Republican or a Democrat, but a Georgian, it's trying to find a responsible way to do this rather than ignoring all scientific and medical advice and just sort of throwing all the doors open at once because you think it's time. And obviously I'm referring to my own home state there. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be easy. One of the arguments I would make for the idea of sports coming back in some controlled way is that I think it would give people something tangible and familiar, something they understand that could help kind of chart the progress of our attempts to get back to what you refer to there, maybe a new normal, or at least a sort of normal for now, if you want to say that, where there still are going to be restrictions, there still are going to be concerns, that there still will be times when we have to maybe tamp some things down for public safety. But, it's hard to take somebody inside of the inner workings of a drug trial or a vaccine development, but they know what sports looks like and they can see what works and what doesn't, and they can see sports start back up and then, hey, it has to shut down for a couple weeks because of some positive cases or whatever, but then they refine their process and they get a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And it's just something familiar for people to kind of use to chart the progress of all this. And that's something that I think, potentially could be valuable as we do start to see some sports try to return under controlled conditions. But it's going to be a slow, painful process at times. It's going to sputter a lot, and we're just going to have to try and work together as a society, I suppose, to make the best of it.
Zach, the NCAA on Friday released a document that was titled Core Principles of Resocialization of College Sport, where they give, I think it was 9 different principles as well as some other information spread over 3 phases before they would consider a return to any sort of organized college athletics or college sports. What did you make of that plan specifically in relation to college football this fall, or at least at some point in the forthcoming academic school year?
I think we're in this situation where, like, you've kind of got to plan for the worst case scenario and then work backward from there. You have to, in whatever you're doing, if you run any sort of organization that had to shut down its process, but could potentially start to reopen it at some point in the next few months, could in theory reopen it before there's a vaccine. So for example, it's hard to imagine, 70,000 people in a stadium before we have confidence in the level of herd immunity through a vaccine. And also just people who've contracted this and gotten better and have antibodies and those sorts of things. But the idea of organizations that could restart at least nominally under the right conditions, I think you've got to start with the worst case scenario. What is the most difficult thing we'd have to grapple with? The most difficult scenario we'd have to grapple with, and then work backward from there. I think what's going to be, and I've said this in different ways before, I think it's right of the NCAA to come up with this plan. I think that it is, you know, certainly at least in its, and I won't pretend that I've sat down and read it all the way through, but kind of glancing at the highlights, certainly it seems well-founded. It seems, you know, kind of put together in good faith and so forth. The one part about the NCAA that I think is going to be difficult is you have, compared to pro sports, I should say, it's just that you have so many different stakeholders involved in the NCAA, and you don't know who's calling the shots. The NCAA ultimately is an organization that only exists at the behest and the will of its members, so you can't necessarily say that the NCAA is going to make every big decision and call every, you know, sort of absolute whatever in this. The conferences, you know, it's going to be difficult, I think, to get them all uniform and kind of marching in lockstep all the time on these sorts of things. The individual schools and school presidents and boards of regents or trustees are going to want to have their say. And then you're going to get into, you know, issues of amateurism and whether or not you are asking athletes to take undue risks effectively that you wouldn't be asking normal students to take. And so I think it's good to have these plans. I will say, as I've said for a while, I think college athletics is going to be more complicated to get it back than, let's say, baseball or soccer or, you know, like the leagues that basically can sort of organize their own uniform approach across the spectrum. I think it's going to be a little bit easier for those primarily professional sports. But if you're college, one way or the other, you do have to have these plans, and you do have to be able to put these things down on paper so that you can give people checklists that they can take back and transpose onto their individual situations in states or in conferences or whatever it may be. And then, you know, at least you're giving people an idea of these are the steps we need to work toward to feel like we are, you know, in the right place.
Talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Zach, I know everybody wants to talk about the college football season, but I've had more and more questions about college basketball, and do you think that it'll get going on time? Could it be something that isn't played, or what would it look like with social distancing in Assembly Hall? I think we're way, way too far out to even think about college basketball. I think the plan of attack for college football, whenever it is announced, and I do feel like that we're getting closer just based on general comments you hear from different stakeholders. I think maybe after college football, and there's a plan out for that, we can start to think a little bit more about basketball. But it is interesting just to ponder what basketball could look like. Could it be played later, especially if college football is bumped back? Could it be played with social distancing? What would a bench look like with players spaced out 6 feet? And would the 6 feet really matter for the team? Because just like in football, they're out on the playing floor, sweating, touching each other, guarding each other, being physical with each other. And what would a crowd look like at Assembly Hall if it was only, say, 50% or 30%, whatever you could get away with while allowing non-immediate family members, I guess, to have some distance between them? If this thing continues on, and I think a lot of people think that it will, I'm talking about the virus, college basketball could also look very, very different this year.
No, I mean, I think it will look different, and you're right, and I think that, you know, even then we could get into more complex discussions about, you know, I think there are smart people involved in this that worry about a surge in cases in the fall, you know, the way these things can work seasonally, same with the flu, that, you know, it can for a number of reasons, both, you know, chemical and also sort of behavioral, it can die down in the summer and then surge back in the fall. You know, I think you're right in the sense that and I found myself in my own head when I read some of what's written and hear some of what's said about all this right now, harkening back to that in Apollo 13 where they get into a big argument about something that may not work on the spaceship. And Tom Hanks says, you know, we have 1,000 things that need to happen in order. We are on step 4. You are on step, 568. Listen, again, it would be negligent if there's not people in a room somewhere, hopefully virtually, thinking about how college basketball will work. And I think that, the other thing, to come back to that example about, I'm making a lot of bad comparisons today, but to come back to that sort of comparison about learning how to drive a stick shift, once you get it going smooth, it feels very natural very quickly. Once we get some sports going, and I think we'll see that within the next month or so, and I'm talking about, Western, I mean, like the Korean Baseball League is going to get rolling here. Taiwanese baseball has been playing for a while. I'm talking about sports in the West where we have struggled a little bit more to kind of confront the realities of how to manage this disease while we fight toward a vaccine. But once some sports get rolling, I think suddenly people will have a template. They'll have a blueprint that they can try and lay over their sport, whatever it is, and say, okay, this isn't applicable because this challenge is different, but these solutions to these problems, we're seeing they work. We're seeing that these leagues started up first, they're hitting some roadblocks because of these issues. Well, how can we mitigate that up front before we start our season? And so on and so forth. I think that it will be easier for everyone once some of it gets rolling. And so to use your kind of football versus basketball example, I think that it is something where, like, let's say we can figure out a way to get football back in some form, I would find it easy to believe that we could transpose at least some of the solution that gets us there onto basketball. But again, it's sort of like, we're talking about, step 18 when we're still on step 2. And the other thing I would say too is, and this maybe comes back more to habits and sports media and things like that, but like, what is today? May 4th?
Mm-hmm.
Football season's not supposed to start for 4 months. And I'm not saying that it's going to start on time. Please understand it. I'm not saying it's going to start fans. I'm not saying any of that. But, like, we also don't need a solution tomorrow. And maybe more than that, we don't need to say that if we don't have a solution tomorrow, then we have run out of time for the solution. I've said this from the beginning. We have nothing but time right now. And yes, some hard decisions are going to have to be taken, but I know it's hard for people to be patient. I know everybody's going a little stir crazy, but it's got to happen in stages here. And it's not going to be a perfect sort of linear graph upward. There's going to be setbacks, there's going to be staggers, and we're going to come up with solutions for that too. Because we don't really have any other choice, I suppose.
Absolutely. Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, my guest. I do want to touch on football for a moment. Indiana football losing a player over the weekend. They actually picked up a commitment, on Friday. Then they lost a player over the weekend. Rodney McGraw of Elkhart, Indiana, who was a notable in-state player that made his decision to come to Indiana and was the first commit in the 2021 class, flipped and went to Penn State. And as a basketball guy, it is so hard for me to understand this football recruiting where you commit to a school, but you continue to be recruited and called by other schools, and ultimately you flip your decision. It happens in basketball, but normally it's a coach leaves, or normally it's a player and his family made the decision. The recruiting process didn't really continue on after they made their at least verbal commitment. So Indiana loses a notable name in the 2021 class, and they lose him to a Big Ten rival.
Yeah, and listen, these are the sorts of things that happen. And you're right, it's different football versus basketball. I think there's a variety of reasons for that. Like some of it's, you know, just the cultural and the behaviors that have been kind of ingrained into the system over time. I think some of it is also just the fact that it's a quantity game. You know, basketball's, you know, most basketball recruiting classes aren't more than what, maybe four guys. You know, probably the average is somewhere between three and four, I would guess. So it's a lot about, you know, drilling in on making very intense personal connections with guys and their families. And, you know, and I'm not saying that you don't do that in football too, but with football, there's so many more moving parts that you can wind up in a situation where, you know, for example, a lot of times what will happen in cases like this is, you know, a football program will say, you know, we need X number of players at Y position. Here is our board. We like these, you know, let's say we need three guys at linebacker this year. We like, you know, we like these five the most. So they're the ones we're going to focus on first. And if we still have spots open once we lose, you know, once those five guys commit, then we'll start going down the list. We'll start looking for, you know, the guys we like next most and on and on. And of course, you know, fans will get upset at this sort of thing. And those same fans will celebrate when, you know, Indiana flips a kid from another school to fill the spot. I mean, I think about, you know, Peyton Hendershot was originally committed to Ball State as an example. I mean, Indiana's flipped plenty of kids over the years. And the other thing I'd say too, and I, this is not a commentary on Rodney McGraw or, you know, what he will do in college or his potential. I've never seen him play, but it's also a reminder that recruiting, you know, can be funky. I remember when Indiana committed Gunnar Kiel in 2010, they gave him a couple guys, a running back from Illinois named David Smith and a wide receiver from Cincinnati named Monty Medeiros that they really wanted him to kind of personally recruit. They wound up getting none of those guys. Smith went to Oklahoma, Medeiros went to Michigan State, and Kiel went to Notre Dame. They replaced him with Nate Sudfeld, Ricky Jones, and Tevin Coleman. And, you know, Ricky Jones left college, I think, with about 1,600 career receiving yards, many more than Monty Medeiros. Nate Sudfeld is Indiana's all-time leading passer, and Tevin Coleman rushed for 2,000 yards in a single season, first IU back to do that. And obviously, Sudfeld and Coleman are now in the NFL. And so my point is just, it's funny how these things can work out. You know, you lose the guy that you wanted first, or maybe it was also just maybe the guy that took the offer first. Maybe you said to three players, we've got this one spot, you know, does one of you want it? And he was the first one to take it, but maybe one of those other two guys comes in now. You just never know. It obviously Indiana will not have wanted to lose Rodney McGraw, but this is just kind of the nature of things. I would find it hard to imagine Indiana's coaches are all that offended, because I think that they've been around long enough to know that this is kind of how the game is played. And, you know, that's just kind of where you go from. It's where you go from here that counts.
Zach, if you have time, I've got one more question. This one comes from social media, from our show Facebook page. Zach, what is the next need for IU from a recruiting standpoint? I guess that's a pretty wide question there. When you look at the 2021 class, which is coming up next, I guess that's where this question comes from, with different players in the fold, or I should say Logan Duncombe in the fold, and perhaps Christian Lander, depending on if he officially makes it to the 2020 class through reclassification. What could be the next position as you look out and project out the IU roster that Indiana needs to focus on? Obviously, Trey Kaufman is the focal point now. I think we could all agree on that. But what is maybe a positional need of Indiana moving forward in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say because Kaufman's the focus, but I think Kaufman's the focus in part because of his talent and in part because you recognize what Indiana is set to lose in the next, you know, after the next two seasons in the post. So, for example, Joey Brunk is a redshirt senior this upcoming year. Rhys Thompson, if we presume that he plays out his eligibility, you know, I just say those sorts of things because you never know who makes a big jump, goes to the NBA, whatever. I'm not suggesting Rhys Thompson go to the NBA, but you understand what I'm saying. Rhys Thompson is scheduled to be a redshirt senior the year after that. Trace Jackson Davis, you would imagine, is an early entry candidate for the NBA draft, if not after next season. and certainly by the end of the 2021-2022 season. And so the point is, you've got a lot of space in there for bigs. You didn't take a true big in 2020. You took basically three guards, if we, for the moment, keep Lander in 2020, and a wing. You only took one big in 2019, and that's Trayce Jackson-Davis. And I think it's pretty clear that Archie Miller always wants a lot of front court options, that he's always going to value a team that can rebound the ball, that can match up inside. I compare it to Tom Izzo. And when I say that, I'm always quick to say I recognize what Tom Izzo has accomplished in his career and how it's different from Archie Miller to this point. But it's that same sort of style of always wanting to be tough on the glass, always wanting to have depth inside, always wanting to be able to match up big on big when you need to. I think that it's certainly because of Trey Kaufman's talent and his appeal to the program, but I think it's also because of the position he plays. I would think that he is a priority, maybe the priority, and certainly, in fact, I would be confident as to say he is the priority, but I think that his position is also a great priority because even with Duncan in the fold, you're still going to lose quite a bit of size in the next 2 years. You're going to want to be able to start replacing that now. You know, a guy like Trey Kaufman might play younger, but a guy like Logan Duncan might be, you know, there to develop for a couple of years. But when he's ready to step into a bigger role is also when you lose a couple guys to graduation and you need him to step into that role as well.
Good stuff from Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Zach, thanks for a little extended chat with us today, and we'll talk with you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Zach Osterman of the Star. You can read his work at IndyStar.com/sports. Just click on Hoosiers. Everything that Zach covers in the IU beat can be found there. All right, we'll head to a commercial break. Chad Gilbert, we'll see if we can get him. I think he's coming out of a meeting, virtual meeting, that is, with the IHSA. We also are going to do our senior spotlight today. Jack Giltner of New Washington High School. He plays baseball and boys track and field for New Washington in the spring. So he lost two senior seasons. We'll profile him and a lot more still all ahead in this Monday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment here on this Monday program. No Chad Gilbert today, at least so far. He was in an IHSA board meeting, a virtual meeting. We were hoping to squeeze him on at the very end, but so far we have not been able to connect with him. We also have our senior spotlight that we're going to do here in just a moment as well to wrap up the show. We do it each day as we showcase seniors from across Clark and Floyd counties that unfortunately have lost their senior seasons. And today, when we tell you about Jack Giltner here in a few minutes, he has lost two senior seasons as a baseball player and a member of track and field as well at New Washington High School. Let's talk a little bit about the Last Dance last night on ESPN. Of course, the docuseries about the Bulls and Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and I guess you could say Dennis Rodman and Phil Jackson and other interviews as well. But really good stuff. And last night, just there are so many good things. But last night, really loved the footage and the time the show spent. And I hope that there's more because it does bounce around. It's not really in some type of chronological order. It does bounce around a little bit. If I had one negative, that's what it would be. They try to narrate and show you where it's going with a timeline they put on the screen as it transitions from segment to segment. But it can be a little hard to follow. But love the time they spent on the original Dream Team that played in Barcelona. They even focused on, and I've seen this footage, I think it's on YouTube, of a inter-squad scrimmage game. No people in the stands. empty gym. I think it was played in Monte Carlo, and it was great basketball. Of course, the camera footage is not tremendous at all, but you can hear the guys going at it. You can hear Jordan. You can hear Barkley. You can really hear Jordan and Magic Johnson mouthing back and forth. They were on opposite teams in this scrimmage game. And, of course, that was just before it all got started officially. Also really interesting when they take on Croatia that year, who was the only legitimate competition in the field, at least going into the thing. You know, Tony Kukoc had been drafted but had not yet come to the United States to play for the Bulls. And so a lot of people were curious to see who he was, what he was all about, in case he did at some point, and I think everyone thought he would, come to the United States to play basketball and join the Bulls, who owned his draft rights, essentially. He stunk it up in the first game, and the NBA players were absolutely just giving it to him and mouthing him to the media afterwards. And then when they met Croatia again in the gold medal game, he played considerably better. But, of course, he would come to be part of the Bulls and come to be part of Jordan's second run, you could say, with the Bulls. But that was very interesting. Also, the behind-the-scenes dislike that Jordan had for Isaiah Thomas after their rivalry with the Pistons, where the Pistons got the best of the Bulls in most of the years until the very end of their run, and that, you know, Jordan is accused of keeping Isaiah off of the Dream Team. He was the noticeable player that probably should have been on the team that was absent. Of course, Jordan's side of the story is a little bit different. He denies being ultimately the person that kept him off, but thought that was interesting. Also, the shoe stuff last night. At that time, Converse had everybody, all the big-name players. Jordan wanted to go a different route, said he wanted to go with Adidas, who at that time was, you know, running in soccer, I think. I don't know if they had any, if very little, involvement in other sports or in basketball. Ultimately, he ended up going with Nike. It gives some of that behind-the-scenes footage, his visit to the Nike campus out in Oregon. His mother really encouraged him to go. He did not even want to go to the meeting with Nike, which, of course, you just think about what could have been. Where would the Air Jordans be? Would there be an Air Jordan? What would it look like as an Adidas model? And then on top of that, the Nike story, as good as the docuseries has been, no mention at all of the key player that got him to Nike. It's Sonny Vaccaro. Anybody that's followed grassroots basketball and followed the Jordan shoe side of things knows that Sonny Vaccaro and maybe even George Raveling as well were the key reasons that Jordan found himself with Nike in front of him in a big meeting out in Oregon. All right, that wraps things up for today. We've got our senior spotlight for a spring sport athlete. Today we recognize Jack Giltner of New Washington High School, baseball player and member of the track and field team in the spring. He's a member of the student council. He's a student ambassador for Greater Clark County Schools Academies and also a National Honor Society member as well. Has some interesting hobbies. He likes woodworking, also is a musician, and works on his family farm in the New Washington area. He wanted to give some shout-outs. Courtney Isaac, she's the boys track and field coach at New Washington, and also John Aaron, he's the baseball coach at New Washington as well. He's got some juggling on his hands in a normal spring, does Jack, to get in both baseball and track and field practices and meets and games and make it all work along with his academic schedule. Jack Giltner is the son of Tom and Brandy Giltner. After high school, he's going to pursue a bachelor's degree in accounting at Xavier University in the Cincinnati area. That is big time stuff, Jack. Congratulations to you. Jack Giltner of New Washington, our profile athlete today. And again, each day we tell you about a spring sport athlete here in Clark and Floyd County. He's a senior that has lost their senior year. It's not just sports. They've lost prom. They've lost graduation in many cases. And so we want to do our smart part to recognize these great athletes. And Jack, today we salute you for all of your work, both on the field and the track and in the classroom as well. Job well done at New Washington High School. That's going to wrap things up for this Monday edition of the show. Back with you Tuesday. Greg Doyle joins Mike Pegram as well to talk IU basketball. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Thank you, seniors, for the memories. And thanks all of our senior spotlight sponsors, T.A. Jenkins, Mitch Craig Heating and Cooling, and UPSJobs.com/Louisville.